see more of my mouth.
Well, I mean, you as a salesperson, you understand how important it is to be on brand.
Mm, yeah, I do, actually. So this this so truth in advertising, truth in lending. I gave a 2-week notice to my job today.
Whoa!
And
For what?
Phone call was my boss telling me, look, we need you back. This is what we're going to do for you. And they countered very, 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 very well. Got a new job, or an offer, accepted an offer for a job that effectively, well, nearly doubles my salary.
Wow.
The earning potential is...
That's almost two times as much.
I'm going to miss this. I really am. I will. I will miss this. I promise.
Like 10 years from now.
10 years from now, I will remember, oh, yes, I miss those days. So it's very lucrative, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It's tech money. It's Seattle tech money. And
are you moving again?
No. I will be doing this remotely via a telephone. And let my company know today, and they have countered, and it feels good to be wanted. But
what's that like?
It's interesting. I have a decision to make in the next couple days.
Don't go back to your old company. That's always the problem. The problem is that you...
Does that ever work? Is it ever a good thing?
Well,
I don't know.
It's like if you threaten to leave your significant other and then they're like, I'll fix myself. Even if they fix yourself, like you still have in your history this problem of like, you were about to leave.
Yeah. And they won't forget it. It'll make things more complicated. And you'll always be the guy that almost left.
Exactly.
It's like a scarlet letter that I'm not going to be able to be rid of. Yes. I understood that reference. It's from a village. The scarlet letter is from a village that has said, no, it's okay. Don't worry. Come back. We won't stone you.
Mm-hmm,
you know, it's not a big deal.
We're not even sure you would float.
They're just kind of giving me looks in the town square as I'm walking around with the scarlet letter. Hi, Jim. How you doing? You know,
everything
and I don't know
fine.
How to interpret. Yeah, everything's, I don't know how to interpret it.
I mean, I guess the way that this could go, like my rule on that is usually always no, but if it's the case that like the people that you actually interact with were on your side and they wanted to get you a raise and they weren't able to, but then they were able to go to the higher ups when you said you were leaving and that's when they were actually able to get you a raise and you never have to interact with the higher ups, like at that point, you kind of feel like all the people that you care about, as long as you're not worried about upward mobility, all the people that you care about were on your side anyway and they're just happy for you. But if it wasn't that way, then everything we just said still applies, I think.
Yeah. The former applies here. That is indeed the case. Though I talk with those higher ups all the time.
Yeah.
And have rapport with them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that, you know, the people surrounding me, my immediate supervisor went to bat for me and secured this matching offer essentially with some nice perks. I didn't expect it. But I still would interact with the senior leadership, you know, frequently.
Right.
And I'm just going to still be that guy. But I mean, it's just like, I don't know, man. I can't just say no, like right now. I want to think about it and consider it.
Sure.
It's, you know, I'm going to a nice job. I think I'm going to do well at it. But, you know, some imposter syndrome is going to come back. I don't know these people. This is going to be kind of scary. Kind of new, but I've been thinking to myself those past couple of days, I'm just so freaking scared all the time. Like John Locke and Lost, I'm afraid all the time. And as such, I'm just an effective character in a cool TV show. No,
right.
That's not, he was a bad leader. The fearful John was a bad leader when the smoke monster was impersonating him. He was awesome. John Locke was all of a sudden cool.
Right.
Do you remember the scene in season 6 where Smoke Monster guy in John Locke form is interacting with Sawyer and Sawyer says, "You're not John Locke. I knew that from the moment I saw you."
Yeah, yeah.
And the Smoke Monster guy said, "How did you know?" And Sawyer says, what did he say? "Because you're not afraid."
I do remember that.
And it was like such a cool scene. It was like, you know, a simple line, a simple scene, but the actor who plays John Locke, I think was amazing because he really did switch his mindset. He looked confident and was so sure. And that was not John Locke before. John Locke was you know, anxious and afraid, at least it's from seasons two onward. But
right.
Anyways, dumb excursus. Sorry, but
people,
those
people,
are the things I'm thinking about.
People at home are like, I thought they were done with Lost.
No.
Actually, no. If you are a person at home who gets sick of us talking about the same things over and over again, man, this is the episode for you.
This is the episode you need to tune in. Now, let's see what Jordan Peterson thinks about this. No, I'm kidding. enough of that.
Did you see, did I post that on Slack, the Jordan Peterson, what was it? I posted it. It was related to...
I don't remember this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Rewrite iconic Lord of the Rings quotes as Jordan B. Peterson.
Okay, yeah. I do remotely remember that. I don't remember it being overtly funny, but the joke potential is there.
Well, I mean, there's examples that I thought were funny.
Yeah. Can you read one that would be...
That raises the question, what is Taters Precious? It's like, no, give it to us raw and wriggling, or don't give it at all. As it stands, you're ruining it. Your fire is a bloody catastrophe that emerges out of nihilistic misery. I'm not good at Jordan Peterson impressions.
I couldn't either. He's like a weak voice with not a lot of oomph or chutzpah. But I mean, I'm trying to hear that in his voice, and I think it kind of works.
Yeah, if you read them yourself, I think it's a better experience.
Yeah, it's a better experience. Yeah, totally get that. So as is proper when we record this show, I have done very little preparation.
Right.
But it's kind of a fitting way to go out, wouldn't you say?
I listened to half of our first episode until I realized I couldn't anymore. And then I listened to Red Green Colorblind.
Why couldn't you finish it?
Well, because I wanted to do Red Green Colorblind and I was running out of time.
Okay, all right. I couldn't listen to you, Jim. Now, those first 12, 13 episodes, we'll get into this. But that was, I think, that's vintage pure flogging. Like, that is you and I at our most innocent and hopeful.
Flogging neat.
Yeah, flogging neat. Just straight, no chaser. No rocks, just pure unadulterated fun. And things changed at around episode 13 when the first time I quit. the show was so different. I mean, we got a good run, but those, I don't know, there's something about those first 13 or 14 episodes that are actually really kind of cool. Because you and I were just so enthusiastic about the show. We thought it was just going to do great. And I think it did do pretty well at first in terms of building momentum. We actually had quite a few listeners.
We did, yeah. Yeah.
And then we lost most of them.
My voice got lower. Have you noticed that? I was listening to episode one and I was like, why is my voice so high?
Really?
Yeah.
Was it because of the mic or you're talking about your voice? I don't, the mic sound has kind of changed throughout the years.
I think something I recognized about myself at a certain point is that I tend to talk high. Like, I tend to just talk like this. And I just stopped.
Maybe you're right. Okay, I'm starting to hear that. Yeah. Maybe you're just, you know, you're more serious. You're more Presbyterian.
Or I finally hit puberty.
Yeah, you are pretty young. We don't do young David jokes anymore, but you introduced that one. So it's
I did, yeah. No, that was me.
Well, before we get too deep into this, let's go ahead and start the show.
Start the show.
Last time, David. The Lightest Form of Flogging podcast, episode 150.
Thank you, Jim.
I'm Jim, that's David. Here we are one last time. Folks, yes, we have arrived today. This very episode that you are hearing will be officially our last flogging episode.
Well said.
Yes, that's it. Now, we'll mention this a little bit later. We may release further content from our various feeds. Specialized content, but it's not going to be a formal podcast episode. Today's episode will be the last formal discussion-based episode.
Oh, should I have worn a tie?
Maybe. But certainly a crazy occasion. You and I, David, what did we, I was just thinking, we've had lots of breaks, lots of, we have ceased a lot.
Yes.
For lack of a better word. But I think
one might even call you a cessationist.
Yeah. Did we start in 2018? Was that what it was?
Why you put me on the spot here, Jim?
Because I know 150 episodes is pretty decent in terms of just a podcast by two schmucks that nobody knows. I think that's a good accomplishment.
April 2018.
Yeah, that was our first episode.
First episode released. Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You and I have been doing this for a long time.
That's true.
It's been pretty fun. So today, folks, what we're going to try and do is I'm calling this a retrospective episode. So we're just going to. It's exactly what I'm saying. We're just going to think back and comment on.
There'll be lots of harps,
topics and themes. Yeah, I'm going to put lots of sound effects in this. And we're just going to kind of reminisce about and reflect on what we've managed to do with this show. And pretty happy that while we may not have a huge audience, those that are listening have been pretty loyal and a pretty cool audience that likes to interact with us. And we've enjoyed kind of putting out this content for them. This show is going to live on the interwebs. We are going to keep our website and keep hosting the episodes on there.
Thanks to Netlify.
Yes. Because, you know, it may be fun for someone. I don't know how we're going to do this. I haven't thought about this or planned this, but kind of keep the show alive in a limited way. And if someone chooses to kind of dig into the show, they have the entire show to listen to. Our show is pretty unique in that it does have bits. It has storylines weaved through. We have stories. We've done commercials, bits, skits. We have reoccurring conversations about topics that we've covered before and we'll cover again.
Time travel.
And we've gone through kind of an evolution. This show has really been about how David and I have dealt with life differently and yet have remained friends. And to say that we've gone through an evolution, I think, is putting it lightly.
Right.
But that's my opening salvo. So we have a list of topics in no particular order or priority, and we're just going to kind of go through them. But that's my opening salvo. David, do you have anything you'd like to say to kind of kick this thing off?
Jim means that it is an unordered list of
yes.
topics. Well, I don't know. We were going to ask listeners what they thought some of the things that we should kind of swoop back around on. And in typical flogging fashion, neither of us did it. We didn't communicate about who was going to do it. And so it didn't get done.
It didn't get done. So hopefully our list will be sufficient, I guess.
And if not, you can shake your fist and yell at a cloud.
Because that is all you can do.
Yep, and our server is in the cloud, so it might hear you.
It might hear you. Slap away at the server in the cloud and just see what people think of you. Your wife is, what is he doing? He's slapping in a cloud. So I think a good question to start off with, David, or a good theme to, or a thing for us to rap about, rhapsodize about, is our Mitch Hedberg jokes. No, I'm kidding. though, I think a fun treat for our audience whenever we did those.
I think so too.
What Christian-ish two guys talking podcast in our world ever did that?
I find that because of the fact that we've done them, I have a bunch of them, not like strictly memorized, but like I can just say them, yeah, you know, roughly off too. The top of my head, and I will do that. And I always feel bad because people will often laugh so hard at them that I don't get to credit Mitch Hedberg because like they'll be like, you know, 10 full seconds of laughter and then we'll move on.
I have used many times the rice joke. It is my favorite joke. It's not, yes. It's a weird joke. It doesn't speak or it doesn't deliver well. Cause it is kind of like really out there, but if someone mentions rice, I have at the ready, rain or shine, day or night, no matter where I am, I would say, you know what I like about rice? It's a really cool food. If you want to eat a 2,000 of something or 1,000, and they just kind of look at me and start giggling. it's a great event. I should get more memorized for sure. But yeah, he's pretty classic. But anyways, so you and I set out with a very specific goal in mind when we started this show.
we began with the end in mind. Yes.
Yes. And I think that goal could be safely summarized as we didn't want a theology show. We didn't want another theology show. I think like 98% of the guys in that run around in our circle with similar beliefs to us, if they start basically 20-something, 30-something white guys, when they start a podcast, it's going to be about theology, and it's going to be pretty boring and uninteresting and serves no use to anyone. Because they're just regurgitating opinions, and they're offering nothing new or insightful, maybe insightful, but really not that interesting. I'm not saying they're not worth downloading or listening to. It's just, you know, what is new here?
They're a dime a dozen.
And also, and this is something you could probably clarify, it was important to you, at least, and me too at the time, that this not be a theology show, because you and I are not pastors. We're not ordained. And we don't really have much business instructing the masses about these things.
Well, and I don't go to mass. I don't know about you Baptists, but
you are, you know, I think you're going to do, you're like full 100% David today.
I have to
like,
be. It's the last episode.
It's the last time. It's the last time.
No, I was just going to say this is one of the topics that you wanted to talk about. Oh, and I guess we're getting into it. This is the first topic on the unordered list. Mm-hmm. But when we first started, we both kind of had this like, well, you know, if we talk about theology, it's okay, and maybe we'll throw it in the after show. And we had like a dedicated after show sound effect.
We did do that. I forgot about that's great. The after show where we would talk about that topic, but we gave people a chance to, you know, disregard
off the show. And I mean, we did that at the beginning of every episode too, but we did it especially at the end. And then I don't remember when it was that I decided, like, man, I need to pull back even further. But
it was probably in the latter third, I think, of the show's
something like
life.
That.
And now I think what happened was you and I, at least I knew that if we did talk about theology, it was going to get us more listeners, just plain and simple. And if we didn't, people in our circle probably wouldn't get the show or have a reason to listen to it. It was this weird place where we were trying to be unique. We were withholding a thing that we knew they wanted. I think you and I kind of gave into that at times in terms of weakness. And we would have certain extended theological discussions that were, and we justified it at the time by saying, we're not going to instruct anybody. We're not going to tell people what they should believe. But we're just going to talk about our experience with it, the regulative principle of worship, so on and so forth. And we did that, but almost like, every time we did it, when it was done, you would say to me, we shouldn't do this. It just doesn't feel right. And we would, you know, for 6 or 7 episodes, would stay away from it and stick with our tried and true psychology topics that I thought was the strength of our show.
Yeah.
Over time, I started to resent this because I might have. It wasn't resentment that I ever felt with you. I don't think it was resentment. Like I could
give
an example.
You had to resent me first.
Would resenting you? I know personally of a husband and wife couple that loved this show and listened to it every week, and told me probably 2/3 of the way into the show's life that they would really prefer it if we talked about theology. And when we don't talk about theology, it's not as cool for them. They liked the bits, but and I heard this, and I'm just like, oh, are we missing out somehow? And then I would somehow convince you to do it. And then we would talk about
theology. Heckin' bamboozled again.
And when it was done, I would think to myself, yeah, we probably shouldn't talk about this because one, I am so bad at it. And it would happen it was this weird cycle. It happened every time. We would talk about theology. I would realize that it is not my strength to kind of rhapsodize in a magisterial way about theology. You can do it very easily. But I was just thinking, I am not the right guy for this. I enjoy talking about it.
Right.
And I can't put in the preparation needed to be sharp on this stuff. And I just don't have your mind. But then I would forget this and go, we got to do theology because we're just getting killed here. You know? And I think finally I got it. And I realize that it actually is good that we don't do that. because when it's all said and done, which is pretty much now, I think what we put together was pretty unique and accomplished at least our goal. And that goal was, how can we make a different podcast?
Right.
Isn't like everything else, but offer some uniqueness, offer something new, gives people a reason to listen. And I think we were successful to a point.
I mean, I think we were. I think the main issue. Okay, so it's been an ongoing bit that I hate the show, right? Like that's part of the bit. But like, and I've made it clear to you both on air and off air at various times. Maybe not often enough. It's kind of like if you keep joking with your wife that you don't love her anymore, and then like every seventh time you're like, but I really do still love you. It's just a bit.
Yeah,
like that was me. That's not helpful to her.
I didn't believe.
Not that I've done this. But like, no, I think, I mean, every time I listen to one of our episodes, I can't say this about every single episode probably, but in general, every time I listen, go back and listen to one of our episodes, I enjoy it. And I find myself laughing at us, not in those idiots way, but in like, this is a fun and funny show. I think the thing that we didn't succeed at was just getting the audience. And I think it was because we always had a hard time, I guess, pitching our value proposition or like, because people will ask me what the show is about and I will give them the spiel. Like people at my church have asked me and I'll say like, well, you know, it's a Baptist and a Presbyterian trying to understand like how they're still friends and how they're similar and how they're different, but without talking as much about the theology and more about talking about our own like psychology and what makes us different from each other. And everybody's like, wow, that sounds really interesting. And then they never go listen to it because it's like, I think part of it is it's too broad and it's too narrow. It is. And like, I think that if we had found the right way to advertise it for lack of a better word, and we had gotten it in front of the right people, I think we could still, I mean, I don't know if you would still want to keep going, but I think we could have had a lot of listeners. And I've told Sarah many times that I think that, you know, if Relight ever gets big enough, I'm going to cough.
You just coughed, everybody. I'm leaving it in.
If Relight ever gets big enough, you know, people are going to find out about flogging because, you know, you find out about the people who make the thing that you really like and you're like, oh, this guy had a podcast once.
Yeah.
And it's going to be like one of those bands that gets rediscovered like 10 years later or like The Office got rediscovered 10 years later. And they'll be like clamoring for us to get the band back together and to make more episodes. And like 10 years from now, when you and I don't even know each other anymore, we'll have to start making the show again.
What a charmed life that show lived. They were big when the show was on.
They were, yeah.
And became big all over again. That does not happen often. Anyways, you know,
it's like Night Court.
Wish I was smart enough to realize this. I wish I got this so much. See, I can't talk. I wish I'd understood this long ago. Because at episode 150, I think you just brought something up that I've never really truly thought about, which is we had trouble connecting with our audience.
Not the listeners, but the potential listeners, right?
You're right. I was just about to say, we have a good group. At times was a really good size of people that enjoyed and it really, truly loved the show. I remember certain people reaching out to me just to tell me that they loved our show.
Hmm.
They absolutely loved the show.
And people didn't do that to me, but I think they understood that I wouldn't have known what to do.
This guy doesn't know what to do
with it. Like, I'll tell Jim.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just like, that kept me going. I'm just like, you know, I know that we're not making something that's incredibly marketable. Maybe I intrinsically understood it, but I can't explain this show to really anybody effectively.
Right.
So that they get a quick hook. You know, that's easy to understand. I could have done that if, you know, it's a theology show where a Baptist and a Presbyterian debate
that's,
about
that's
stuff.
Exactly
like,
it.
You're like, oh, I get that.
And that's why it was so tempting.
Yeah. And but that never worked out. We didn't have the right players on the field. meaning one, me.
Well, and I didn't want to be on the field.
Right.
Don't send me in, coach.
How to explain the show on social media. Might have been kind of our downfall. Admittedly, there is some weird stuff in there, and because of me. and it people probably thought of it as weird at first, but eventually grew to like it. We'll talk about bits later.
Well, it's less weird now that people know who Werner Herzog is because of The Mandalorian.
I know. But I, after all that being said, I still want to say I think you and I made a successful podcast, because our audience, even though it's not as large as perhaps we wanted it to be, at times it was getting close.
The average rate of our listeners is precisely average.
Yes. I think looking back, I think we put out a quality product. If we're just talking about the product,
yep.
The show, I think we did actually a really good job. I think a lot of care has to be put into making these things sound right.
Mm-hmm. And some of the bits in the first few episodes were not as good. And they both of us got better at editing later on.
Yeah, we had to find our way. I think that might have been one of the reasons that killed my enthusiasm for the bits, because I just knew how hard it was to edit them. And I would purposely write very simple bits with not a lot of stuff, because it just took so long.
Yeah. I undid that at the end with the FCU episodes.
That was all you, by the way. So I want to think, if I look back on this show, that I think we accomplished what we set out to do, which is not make a theology podcast. If we did talk about theology, we'll talk about how it affected us, how we changed, which is, I think, more interesting anyway. And I got a chance to have a creative outlet with all the bits and stuff. And I managed to convince you to come along. It took a while. But I convinced you to play along with a lot of this stuff. I mean, think about it, David. Did you ever expect when we started this that you would actually invent some characters yourself?
I did not. And I also just want to say I also just want to say, when I think about ending Flogging, the bits and the skits and everything, especially because now we have this universe of characters, it's one of the things that I'm most sad about.
Yeah. I would be lying if I said I wasn't sad about that, because it's just this weird thing, because it's like you create all these characters and now there's no outlet for you to like, for people to kind of enjoy them or for you to enjoy them. Like, I'm not going to be talking to Bill anymore. Him and I are not going to be on speaking terms anymore, you know? And it's just like, how do we leave them? This might be a good time to jump into the bits. We might as well talk about it. But
we might as well, yeah.
Because of who I'm influenced by in terms of radio personalities and the podcasts and the shows that I like to listen to, and the movies I grew up on, the TV shows I grew up on, I wanted a chance to have a creative outlet for some of these comedy ideas that I had in my head. So I thought that this show would be a great opportunity for it, because it would accomplish our goal of being unique. Would give people something to be entertained by, which endears them to us. I thought this would be a great way to keep people with us. But what I think where it went wrong is that I went too far. And
Icarus.
I did some pretty weird stuff. And my humor is, I guess, maybe an acquired taste. It's very Monty Python, which may not translate well on radio or podcast audio form. The stuff that makes me laugh doesn't make everybody laugh in my life. And I should have realized that. But I think it became endearing, perhaps, as time went on. But I love what we did. There are so many bits. We did a bit per show for a long time.
We did, yeah.
And in later years, we did more long form stuff, which I think is really cool, too. I wanted to do more, but I just ran out of gas towards the end and wasn't able to really, crank out what I wanted to.
Were there no Taco Bells in Spokane?
What?
Ran out of gas. It was. So anyway.
Anyway. But your wife has always been kind of like a good. I can't think of a good word or phrase, but
coal mine canary.
Someone to test the effectiveness of the show against.
Nailed
like
it.
her opinion was, I don't know if she knows this, but you were vocal about her opinions of the show from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think she intended to like give us feedback, but she would tell you about it. And you would tell
she
me.
Did.
Okay, all right. David, I have a list of five things.
Well, she knew that she's one of the co-host's wives, and in a very real sense, I represent her. And a lot of the people who were listening, she knew them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She cared about whether the show was good or not.
She knew how it was going to be received, I think, very acutely. So I get it.
She is very cute. Yeah.
And I think I changed some things because of her. Like specifically in reference to the complaints. Think I would. Now, my favorite moment in terms of your wife's influence on this show was when I think I did the and this is just an example, folks, of how far I took this. I think I did a bit where Matt Chandler, Piper, and Jim MacArthur got into a fight at a Gospel Coalition conference.
Yep.
That just there, just that alone is the perfect representative bit of my humor. And
you were in a rut though, because
I think I might
every bit was just Matt Chandler fighting someone.
Yeah, it was just very violent.
Yeah.
And most of my bits were the dialogue, it's based in conflict.
Well, and it would also usually happen at the end. Like you know how Looney Tunes is some of the funniest stuff like ever made, but they had no idea how to end a cartoon. And usually what would happen is you would come up with a clever idea for some sort of like a plot device, right? You'd bring in the characters, some funny stuff would happen, and then to end it, you would just, everybody's fighting, everybody, there's conflict and everybody's fighting. And that was just like, well, it's time to end this. So somebody punches somebody.
Yeah. Maybe that had more influence on me than I gave it credit for. But I, and if someone were to want to listen to a podcast that was made by Christians with Christian topics and they did humor, I don't think they would expect what they heard from our show.
Especially not that episode.
It got there. We did some dark stuff, violent stuff, lots of interpersonal conflict. Mm. And to me, I made it in a funny way. That stuff makes me laugh quite a bit. And I believe the line that I will never forget is Sarah said, I don't think this has been said of any Christian podcast, which is in terms of the guys, the characters fighting. She said, is this even allowed? Like, can you even do this?
Like, I don't remember her saying that.
It was something like that. Yeah, she said that. She said, is this?
Oh, because, yeah, I mean, we're representing like people who exist in real life.
Well, a possible exception of Jim MacArthur. I think we got away with that.
But yeah, I mean, nobody would guess who that was based off of.
No. Even if we said Jim MacArthur, they wouldn't ever get it that it was John MacArthur. And it was
because your impression was so bad
that I couldn't do an impression for, but wanted to do it anyway. So I named him Jim MacArthur and didn't do his voice at all. And I put him in multiple bits. But so here's what I'm getting to. I think something that I love and regret about our bits is that I really did them all for me. And this ties into what an earlier comment that you made, that we had trouble really connecting with our audience or selling it, trying to give them a reason, a value proposition. And most of the bits that I did, Duke, most of the bits I did not really have the audience in mind. Like, how do I please them? How do I make them laugh? I thought if I just make myself laugh, they might laugh too. And we found our audience, and we know we made some of them laugh, and I just kept going with it. And I don't know if I regret that, but maybe I do.
I don't think, I was just listening to another podcast where they say you're familiar. We're not going to get into this discussion if everybody wants us to, maybe we'll do a dedicated episode on it or something. But are you familiar with everything that's going on with our artificial intelligence and art right now?
No. Oh, well, yeah, I've seen
like
some
the image
of the
generation and all of that.
I have.
So I was listening to a show and there's a whole thing now where like people feel like it's going to be only a matter of days, weeks or months before you can type something like the J.R.R. Tolkien's next book after the Return of the King, and poof, like you can automatically, you can just start reading something synthesized from all of Tolkien's works. That is what he might have written if he had written a book after after the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And the one co-host, CGP Grey, was saying that like Tolkien actually started writing a book after the Return of the King. But he said in like a letter, a private letter to somebody, he said that he just stopped after writing like two chapters because all of the magic had been like removed from the Lord of the Rings, in the sense that like this was the precursor to the Age of Men. And like in the Age of Men, there's not as much magic. So all he could have written was like a normal adventure book. And that's what he started to write. And he knew people would want it, but he decided it wasn't going to be good. It wasn't going to be up to his standards. It wasn't going to be something that he wanted to make. So he started working on like prequel stuff, like the Silmarillion and all that. Yeah. But he said that one of the most important things about art is the creator's decision and capacity to say yes and no to things, especially to say no to things. But the so I think that like obviously there's always some give and take. Like if you're making something that's just so obscure that literally nobody likes it, mm-hmm. you're not succeeding because you're not actually sharing anything with anyone right. in a meaningful way.
Yeah, yeah.
But to a very large degree, you being opinionated and you saying this makes me laugh, I'm going to make more of it, and finding other people who it makes laugh. That's some of the best stuff because it's opinionated stuff. But you know, for you to water it down, sometimes you have to water it down a little bit so that instead of an audience of 3, you can have an audience of 30. But for you to water it down too much, all of a sudden you're just, you know, you're basically just making, you know, children's cartoons, you know, Saturday morning yeah. cartoons.
No, good point. I would like to say that I relate to that in the sense that I decided to stop at least doing the show altogether, in part because I couldn't put out anything funny. I had no ideas. The bits dried up for me. But perhaps the bits would have been better if I had more of that mindset that you just mentioned. You know, if I had some more standards. My only standard was myself. Like, does this make me laugh? That's all I really cared about.
Right.
And I just thought the other people laughing would just be a happy byproduct of it. And I just trusted that they would. That's pretty a narcissistic way of looking at it, of giving someone content. I thought it would. And for a while, I think I convinced myself that it did.
Well, what one man can laugh at, another can.
That's an example of where maybe we went off the rails. We did flogging movie theater or flogging theater.
I think that was funny. You just always picked obscure movies.
I did. Movies that I really liked, but like, I do. Leave it. Leave it.
Sorry.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay. Leave it. Good boy.
Was he trying to make butter out of a canary?
No, he's eating a ferret that has squeakier things in it.
Oh, stuffed ferret.
You get it. Yeah, so I think it probably went off the rails there. But, like, there were cool scenes that I thought would be funny if we put our spin on it.
Right.
So I didn't care that they were pretty obscure movies. I thought that we can make it funny anyway, but I don't think that ultimately worked because I think it's more funny if people recognize the movies.
That's also tricky because, you know,
it would have been much more fun.
Did you ever watch Psych? We were going to have you watch Psych at some point.
I tried. I watched the first episode and thought this is the dumbest show. I'm not going to waste my time with it, okay. Which I regret because something I've learned, the pilot is never really like the remaining episodes.
Well, it can't
episodes.
Be. I mean, many of the people aren't even there anymore. Changes. And yeah, I mean, the cast is different from episode 1 to episode 2. But I was just going to say that Psych it's a very funny show, but one of the things that the characters are constantly doing is making very, very inside references to 1980s movies. And Sarah and I, you know, Sarah being born in the 90s and me being born in 1989, Sarah and I, we get none of the references. Like,
but you like the show anyway, like, though.
No, and we love the show, but sometimes we laugh at the references, even though we have no idea what they are, because, like, it's just kind of funny. Like, so, I don't know that that was bad, and I think that if that was all we were doing, like, if Jim had set out, yeah. It's like, okay, we're not going to do our discussions, we're not going to do bits that everybody can connect to, we're only going to do, you know, bits from really obscure classic cinema. That would have been like we would have been niching down in a way that might have been unhelpful there. But I don't think that having them was. I mean, our audience can give us follow up on this that we will never address. But I don't think that was necessarily bad. I feel like a topic here could really be why the show never got a larger audience.
I can explain that.
Can you?
Yeah, I can. I quit so many times, and stalled the. It stalled the momentum.
Yeah.
Each time I did.
Momentum is a tricky thing, though, right? Like, momentum isn't it's not a force. Like, in terms of how a show, I understand it is a force. But in terms of how a show grows, it's not like an inexplicable force. Like, momentum works because people start talking about the show. And I don't know. I don't know to what degree people, I guess, ever got started talking about the show. Like, we would gain followers, but I don't think it was because, like, you know, this group of people at this church or on this message board or Facebook group or whatever were talking about it a bunch. I don't know. I think
we never did that well, the social media thing, because I left social media.
That was, yeah. And I, you know, I had the show is bad and you shouldn't listen to it bit. And I stuck with that for quite a while. But I knew I wasn't going to be the one to make the show appeal to people. I think if we wanted it to grow, we needed to, well, one of the things we always knew we needed to do was get guests. And guest on other shows. And either of us, by the time that we realized, okay, I don't know, some shows they just take off, right? And we kind of realized our show, because of how hard the value proposition is to explain, because of how inexplicable it is,
we need some help.
Yeah, we're going to need to do some things. And by the time we realized that, neither of us really had time for it. I think that if we had realized that back at episode 3, we might have started doing it then. And we might have really taken off. But I feel like by the time you and I both realized, like, you know, some of the things we could have done were take snippets from our show. And we did this a little bit here and there. Take snippets of our show and put them on YouTube with a graphic. Or take snippets of our show or find ways to share the relevant shows. Like find the Facebook group for reformed people who are neuroatypical. And share Red Green Colorblind on there. The episode where I come out of the autism closet. Like, if we had done stuff like that, I think it could have taken off. But by the time we realized that, we were both kind of tired and didn't have as much time for the show.
I think you brought something up that I kind of forgot, that our social media game, I think, was a big miss.
Yeah.
For us. And I wonder if we did it right from the start, if the show would be any different in terms of the size of its audience. I think maybe it would be a lot bigger, actually.
Yeah.
Because we didn't do what you're supposed to do.
Yep.
And didn't make things easier. I mean, I was doing it first, but I left social media completely.
Yep.
And installed the show momentum-wise the first time around. Second time around hurt. We did a summer where we only released, I think, 2 episodes a month. That hurt us too. And another huge long hiatus. So we've just we tried memes for a while on our Facebook page as a way to kind of spread the comedy, because meme pages are popular and people love memes, and might have been a way, but still we were just a meme page from a podcast that you couldn't figure out anyway. And people were just concentrating on the memes.
Right.
So, I mean, that didn't work either. So yeah, I think we did. Now, we had some fun guests on the show.
We did. Yeah.
We had a couple, and I think those were successful, but I mean, just too little, too late, perhaps.
Yep. Well, and I mean, if we had stuck with it, like I still to this day think that if you and I, you know, if we just, and I don't have time for this, I don't think you have time for this, but if we went back full bore weekly episodes and we started really leaning in on social media and doing all the things that you're supposed to do, I think 3 years from now we could have a sizable audience. Not like, oh, we're going to make a living off of this, but like maybe a few, like a couple thousand listeners, something like that. And we never, by the time we realized that we needed to do things to make that happen, we just didn't have the time. And now here we are. A has been before we've been.
That's right. And enjoying every second of it. So, okay. Well, yeah, I think social media wasn't a topic we were going to talk about, but that's a huge part of perhaps why we didn't reach the heights that we were hoping for.
Mm.
And maybe the comedy aspect of our show would have been more appreciated if we got to more people and they say, oh, hey, you know, a show that's doing humor that virtually no other show I can think of in this space is doing.
I've heard a lot of theology podcasts that do humor, but it's not intentional.
That's especially when the Baptists are talking. Am I right, huh?
Pew, 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 sent with lasers.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought people are going to eat this up. They're going to love it. But we just utterly failed at getting the word out to people. We had some some paid social ads for our Christmas special that I think did well. We did a trailer for season 2 of the show.
We did.
That I think was cool.
Yep.
And probably got some people involved at the time that brought our numbers up to a decent, you know, hey, this show ain't nothing. But quickly lost them when I invented Jim MacArthur. So totally my fault. But I like the bit so much that I considered if I ever did another podcast, it would just be me doing voices and bits and skits.
So like listening to you when you're alone?
No. It's theater of the mind.
I just imagine this is something that you do. Like everybody is out of the house, you know. Christy's taking the kids somewhere and Jim's sitting alone, and what does he do? You just hear him doing voices and bits.
Yeah. Maybe to practice, you know. Oh, I'm doing a David Young. But I wanted, you know, I really wanted to do more with Pastor Gustafson, Maynard Gustafson, with the fishing show. Mm-hmm. I thought that could have been cool. But instead I spent, you know, a couple of bits doing Lester Brannigan, the stupid character with his car dealership. I don't know why I did three of those, but my favorite, still to this day, my favorite back and forth bit is Lester Brannigan telling Bixby to turn left. The finest thing I ever wrote, in my opinion. And it was, I still listen to that show sometimes just to laugh to myself. To hear that. I'm thinking I like what I did there. Yeah. Well, you know what? I hope that the people that enjoyed the show, at least in part, enjoyed it because of the comedy, the bits and the skits that we did.
I think that's absolutely the case. I think what the other thing that we didn't get into, we don't need to talk much about it, but people's kids loved the show because of the bits.
Yeah, yeah, that was, you're right. It was kind of like it made the show palatable for them. Mm-hmm.
Palatable.
Palatable. And by the time a particular family, the Baker family, hears this, they would have heard, we did a bit show. We finished out our bits and characters with the show, I think, two episodes ago. And it answered some, I wrote some of the lines just for them. so they, I know they would laugh, and hopefully they heard those and enjoyed that last show. But yes, I mean, how many shows, you know, like ours can say that, you know? I don't think that many. So that's another cool thing that I think we did. But so yeah, I feel like we've kind of covered that topic fairly well, and ready to kind of move on from that. But I think overall I'm proud of what we did. The body of work alone is pretty cool.
Yep.
All the commercials that we did, satire stuff, skits. I mean, a lot of fun
yep.
stuff.
So what shall we seamlessly transition to next?
Let's talk about our fights. What did you... Was that something that I put in there?
Was that, I don't remember. I was typing notes as you were talking. You were spouting off some yeah. things you wanted to talk about. I don't remember if I thought of that or you did.
Yeah. We certainly have fought.
Verily.
We kind of set the... We pretty much set up the show as a Baptist versus Presbyterian, but I was always so afraid to do it because I know you would mop the floor with me. And I think
it would be a dry mopping too.
A dry mopping. Just, you know, hitting me in the face with a dry mop. I think this really all started from our practice shows that this audience will never hear, but I think you and I did six of them. Practice episodes where you and I just went back.
Did
and
we
forth
do six of them? Wow.
We did do six. I only have like three.
Wow.
Of them. But the last one, you went after me on the charismatic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like a deer in the headlights. I'm just like, I can't be his opposite. I just can't. And I thought, this isn't going to work. This show is not going to work. I'm not going to be able to be the opposite of this guy.
Hmm.
If we ever run into a fight, I mean, I'm just gonna get clobbered. So I kind of like that was the first time I quit. So when I got back into the show, I just thought, well, maybe we can do this. I will just try harder, and it just didn't work. Like talking to you is like a wall coming at you. There's nothing you can do about it. You just have to wait for it to hit you. And
you sound like my mom.
I thought, well, there's a way for me to do this. I'm going to play the dumb guy. Lower expectations for myself.
That's what I've done my entire life.
And then I think it'll be better. It'll be okay.
Is that a thing that you do in real life? Because this is the thing that I learned when I was a teenager, is that like if I say dumb things on purpose all the time, when I say dumb things by accident, people will just think I'm joking. And like, it saved my bacon a number of times. Is this a thing that you do?
I've done it to be funny. Or
to be funny. Like, and then, but then you're kind of glad when people laugh when you say something dumb and you realize retroactively that it was dumb.
Well, I don't want them to think I'm smart, because then they're going to expect me to say smart things.
Exactly.
And disappoint.
Exactly.
Them. So yeah, maybe that's the case. And as I'm getting older, I'm getting more confident in, you know, finding competence in various fields. I can speak a little bit more authoritatively. So thankfully that's gone away. But I have to say, I'm fairly happy with my performance in our fights. You may disagree with this.
Well, I mean, you didn't change
but
your mind.
I think I did better than I thought I would.
Hmm.
Probably the 6 or 7 real fights that you and I had.
Hmm.
I wonder which one was the worst. I know that I remember the most emotion from our cessation.
With Ben?
Ben. Yeah. I remember the most emotion during that one. But, like, I think the one where I was most mad at you personally. What was it? I have a higher view of the church. Was it that one? I think it might have been that one. And you brought up arguments I think this was it. That how could I advocate for a position that, relatively speaking, if you look at church history, is actually kind of novel.
Mm.
And I would be ignoring, you know, 1500, 1600 years of church history. In terms of, I think it was the baptism debate.
Yep. And I were talking about. I want to say something about this debate, and I wonder if you noticed at the time, but keep going.
I was mad at you when you did that. We've already rehashed this many times, so we don't need to do that. But that was probably the fight where you cut me the most.
Hmm.
Not you. No, I should say that differently. Where I was the most mad at you.
Hmm.
You are like an assassin in your performance.
People just pay me.
No emotion. Just surgical, matter-of-fact statements against me, like a robot assassin with darts. Just, and it's like a steady pace, and I can't do anything to slow or quicken.
Jim, I told you, I don't know what to do in the face of compliments like this.
So this is probably one of the finer compliments I've ever given. Now, all that being said, I think I did okay. I didn't crumble. Like I did that first time.
I think a dynamic, I mean, maybe we have talked about this, and I apologize. It's been a long time since I've actually listened to our show, with the exception of Red Green Colorblind, which I listened in preparation for this episode, But so many of the arguments that I would make were always, like, I'm trying to figure out how to put this. If you were having a normal conversation, if two people were having a normal conversation, about theology, like if I were at church and I were talking to a friend about their views on eschatology, and I said, do you think on any level the reason you believe in your position on eschatology is because your dad never loved you, and the guy's an amillennialist, right?
See, this is the difference. I would have been mad at you earlier on the show. Now I'm just laughing.
Well, I mean,
just
it's love, hypothetical too.
I love your you've grown so much more sophisticated in your jabs at Beth. It's just amazing. I'm entertained by them now.
I have grown very powerful since going to a Presbyterian church.
I've grown in power.
Last time we met. But no. So if I were to say that in a conversation, it would come out of complete left field, and it would be insulting on a number of levels. Like, one, you're saying my dad never loved me, and I'm realizing that that's probably true, and now I'm going to go cry. But...
other than that.
Right. So there's that aspect to it, right? Like, I'm challenging something about your psychology that's like there's that.
That's a deep cut, man. It's a cold shot.
Well, and it's a random example. You don't need to focus too much on the example. But the idea being, like, me asking something like, do you think it's because of this aspect of your psychology or how you were raised or something like that? And
most people don't normally go there.
Most people don't normally go there, and I normally wouldn't, is kind of my point. But flogging isn't a show where you and I are supposed to open up our Bibles and our systematic theologies and go to our proof texts and the Latin and the Greek and the Hebrew and the as some would say, Aramaic. Like, it's not a show where we do that. And so the thing that we're supposed to do is go back and forth on, well, do you think that on any level, the fact that your you know, mom always served you soup growing up is a reason why you're averse to immersion. Like, those are the questions that you and I are supposed to ask each other. But I think sometimes you would get upset that I was asking that, because on some level it's insulting, right? Because you want to say, and everybody wants to say, I believe this because Bible verse, Bible verse, Bible verse, quote from a catechism, Bible verse, Bible verse, you know, that's what we all want to say. And the thought that like it could be for something else is kind of insulting. So like that whole topic that we had about, isn't it weird to you? Because for me, I know that like psychologically, it's hard for me to adopt a view that is historically novel. It makes parts of me cringe, besides just my face. And I know that like that's not necessarily ideal, because if we're sola scriptura, I mean, there's reasons why you want to trust the church. Like, I want to be able to trust the church on some level.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I really want to be able to say that, like, but that's not the reason. The reason is the verses. So, like, I was kind of flipping that question around on you to ask you, well, if I feel this way, why don't you feel that way? But I could see how, if you forget the context of flogging, or if it's not clear that flogging is the context, it would seem like what I'm saying in a lot of these situations is, don't you think it's really not about the Bible verses and it's really just about your psychology, when really I'm just trying to do flogging, you know?
Yeah, and I should have known better because I'm the co-host of the show. But, I mean, and also...
You've been doing this for years.
Granted, that's been a long time. But also, I didn't quite understand your style at first. Probably the first half of the show.
Well, and the first 50-some episodes, we didn't realize that I was autistic.
Yeah, that's well, but like it took a couple of fights for us to kind of figure out, for you to explain why your approach is the way it is. And I needed a little bit of some maturity to receive those and realize that it's not personal with you.
Right.
Those deep questions, which would normally, I think, offend most people, and maybe rightly so, but they don't normally receive those types of tactics or techniques in a conversation about baptism. And I get to be, you know, I get to receive it, you know, dumb Jim over here. So I'm like the worst possible person to use that tactic on, because I just don't have maturity. But then once I understood you explained yourself, I think I actually might have been after that particular argument that you said, Jim, you need to realize something about me. I don't mean these with malice or really any emotion whatsoever. It's a legitimate question. The fact that you haven't heard it doesn't mean it's not a legitimate question. And I would just kind of calm down and then consider them. Whether I arrived at your conclusion or not, it may be just be an intellectual thing. But once I got it, I didn't take them as personally. I think our fights might have, the second half of the show, I don't even think we fought at all.
Well, besides that one
with
Ben.
Just the one with Ben.
Well, and I think that was also one of the reasons you felt that way, was because you felt ganged up on.
A little bit by two very... I'm thinking about it. I was just like, were they doing it on purpose? I think they knew. Ben certainly he's probably listened to every episode of the show. And that might have been the fourth or fifth, actually probably the third or fourth time he'd been on the show. He knows you. You and him do this all the time.
We can't not do it. We'll get on the phone to just like catch up. He's a pastor now. Did you know that?
He tried to do that with me once, and I think he like realized that I was a complete fraud. Like he talked to me. We talked on the phone, and I think he thought I was just this Baptist warrior like him. And we talked about a theological issue, and he brought up a couple of things, and I was pretty sure I said that. What's his name? Presbyterian scholar wrote a commentary on Revelation. Greg Beale.
Beale.
I said that he was. I think I said he was a Baptist or he was a New Covenant guy.
I thought he was New Covenant. I really did.
And Ben said, "Jim, he's a Presbyterian."
I didn't realize that. Somebody told me that recently too.
And I was just like, "Oh crap! I just made a huge blunder with Ben. Couldn't match him." At all with what he was throwing at me. And I was like, yeah, Ben, that's really interesting. And he's like wanting to get more out of me. And that was like the last time him and I ever talked about theology.
Ben is a person who is...
I felt ganged up on, but like it was like two against one. But also, let me say this. There was that. I knew you were fine. In fact, you're closer to me in position than most people realize.
Mm. Oh, yeah, because yeah, he and I had more to disagree about potentially than you and I did.
And it was like, but like also, I mean, just to be honest with you.
Please do.
I believe certain things about that position to be biblically true. And two guys I like and respect were, to me, saying things that were contrary to that. And that can make a guy mad, right?
Hmm.
If Joe Schmo
does it, it makes me fascinated, care. But okay.
Fascinated?
It
Why? Makes,
well, because it's like, oh, shoot. Like, if I respect this person, I'm literally, there's an RP pastor that I'm doing this with right now where, like, he's expressing a position. I respect the living heck out of him that I, like, spent a lot of time thinking about, disagree with him on, but I find myself going, like, oh, like, I know that this guy can articulate the positions that I do hold better than I can. I really need to hear him out on this.
Okay. What does that mean?
So it doesn't make me angry. It makes me like want to better understand where he's coming from.
Okay. Well, yeah. So I mean, you know, and I'm not Cool Hand Luke over here. So that can kind of get me fired up.
His hand is cool because it's made of metal because it was chopped off by Darth Vader.
I mean, to me, you know, they're getting kind of crazy with this stuff here. So, I mean, personally, to me, it's not like I felt ganged up on, though I certainly did. But I was feeling like righteous, you know, righteous anger against you two. Mainly against Ben, not really you. But that being said, I don't want to rehash.
I just want to say about Ben. Ben is somebody who charitably thinks that everybody knows more than him to the point where, and sorry, Ben, I really think that he does. This might be a jarring revelation to hear about yourself on a podcast, but to the point where he will insult people because they'll think that he's doing a bit about how dumb they are when really he just does expect you to know the Greek for this. Like he is the kind of person who will have such like high expectations of you that when you fail to meet them, you think that he was just setting you up for failure. But really, he genuinely thought, like, you seem like a smart guy. He does this with me all the time. Like, Ben will just say things and I'll be like, I don't know who three of those people are and what two of those words were. You're going to have to break this down into pigs and bunnies for me. And, you know, he's off pursuing a doctorate. So that's kind of what seminarians do anyway. But Ben specifically, when he knows somebody, like, when he thinks this person knows their stuff, he will like
expect you to know it.
Yeah. And it can come off as insulting. And this is going to be such a weird thing for him to hear about. It's like fallout for Ben and his life.
So it brings me to another topic I want to broach with you. A claim or a complaint that I have against you still.
You sound like my wife. And my mom.
And your mother.
And my pastor.
And your pastor. Everyone has grievances against you. It should be a new podcast. Grievances against David. So you explained to me that your volleys against me, claims against me, either when we were fighting or just gently opposing each other about a particular topic, you reemphasized to me very strongly and very convincingly that
you
never really meant anything ever personal. It was very much clinical. You stuck to the facts. You had really no emotional thrust behind your statements. It just came off that way because you were either brutally pointed, but they were just any perceived harshness was really on the receiver of the comment, not you. And I this is because of just the way you are. And I think I grew to understand that, which just, you know, really helped with me never really taking anything personal that you would say. I think, however, I don't know if that's completely true, because I've noticed something about you ever since you got connected with RPCNA Church and you made that transition from your previous church to this new one. I think you have gotten bolder with your claims, your little jabs. And I think to myself, he's grown in his opposition to me, my views. And I think you can at least agree with that. I mean, maybe you they're the more acute for you now just because of the setting you're in. But like the jabs are getting stronger, like the cognitive dissonance jab. I mean, because people don't understand what that phrase means. They kind of like, am I being insulted? I don't know. I don't know what to feel. But if people actually looked at it, that's kind of a serious charge against an entire group of theologically minded people. And I strongly suspect that there is a little bit of zing behind them. And I'm asking you, do you agree? Do you still believe that this is very much academic for you still? And that you don't have any emotional desire or feeling in this, that you feel not slighted? What am I trying to say? The disagreement is not felt by you. It's just an intellectual one. Are there any desires for you to throw a jab? Because people do it all the time. Even good theologians throw jabs at each other, depending on where things go. And I was just under the assumption that you never got there. But I don't know, man. I don't know. When you and I talk, and your zings are more bold.
So
is that still the case with you?
I think I'm trying to work through what you're saying. I'm going to ask you, I think I understand what you mean by zing, and
you're saying it to get a reaction out of me. Something you know.
Okay, that's interesting.
Is a jab. And you know it is. And you know it will be received as such.
So what I can say is that I have always sought in any debate to diffuse the situation with humor. And I want to make jokes about opposing counsel, as it were, Your Honor, that opposing counsel will themselves laugh at.
Okay, check.
So there are definitely, I think that when we were first arguing, there were times when I would want to mock things Baptists do in a way I know will make Jim Briggs laugh.
Okay, and you did many times.
And I think that what may have happened is that, like, I mean, I tell people I still have Baptist friends, but realistically, I do not interact. I mean, my parents are Baptists, and I call them every week. Sarah's family is Baptist, but they're not the sort of people who think about the distinctions between Presbyterians and Baptists, if that makes sense. Like, that's just not a part, that's not something they discuss in their everyday lives, so it doesn't really work with them. Like, I was never able to make jokes. I could make jokes about Baptists because they might laugh at, like, the classic casserole or not dancing things or whatever. But, like, they weren't people who thought about or spent a lot of time thinking about the differences between Presbyterians and Baptists and whether, like, that wasn't, that culture is kind of different. So what I'm trying to say is I've gotten away from the culture of Baptists, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And that makes me less capable of knowing the kinds of things that you would acknowledge. Like, there are things about Presbyterian culture that I acknowledge are universally funny. Like, we don't have a great sense of humor, but we are a funny people.
Sure you are. No, I believe.
And so, like, there are things that I will say about Presbyterians now to my Presbyterian friends that are jabs at us, right? But, like, I think I'm enough removed from Baptist culture to where the jokes I make are more likely to make basically my friends now laugh than they are to make you laugh. I'm not, you mentioned specifically trying to get a rise out of you or something. It's not a tactic to, I can tell you it's not consciously a tactic to try to, like, throw you off your game or, like, raise the emotional stakes of the thing. But I will just say that, like, I've always tried to balance things with humor, and probably a lot fewer of my jokes are hitting than makes sense. Than used to, I mean.
Okay. Yeah, I get you. And I'm not, like, offended or anything. So don't misinterpret.
You can be.
Oh, sure.
I'm quite used to it.
But I don't, I that's not the case. I don't know. I mean, it's like, could that be true of someone all the time? Could even David, the mighty David McCookie, date our very own Data? Would it be possible for him to, you know, put some sauce on it, put a little zing on this statement, and just throw it across to kind of get at him?
Why do people do that? Why do people say things to get a rise out of their opposition or opposing counsel, Your Honor?
Lack of good argument to throw them off.
Oh, well, then I've never had that problem.
They don't know any better. They're mad, and they don't know what else to do.
they legitimately they legitimately dislike the position or the person. I mean, it just comes out. They believe this person has just horrible beliefs, and the logical conclusions of which put you in a really bad place. And they just feel like there's a stupidity or lack of intelligence, and that's offensive to people. Like, stupid people make some people really mad, and I get that. There's a lot of reasons. Most of them I don't think are very valid. There might be a case to be made for two people who have legitimate disagreements with one another, but do not take themselves that seriously and do it for comedic effect. That's certainly fine. But
sure, and I know definitely we do a lot of that. Both of us. Right.
But I was just like, man, could he be this consistent? You know, and I had my suspicions, and I based on just asking you this question, I'm fairly certain that you are still maintaining that it's all academic, it's all clinical.
I can't really say that
no subversion in any of these things.
One of the reasons you mentioned, I can't say like that it. I don't find the Baptist position to be more frustrating now.
Well, that's interesting to hear.
And what I mean by frustrating is, so I'm okay. Can I say some things that might make you angry?
Sure, yeah, that's fine.
Okay, now that I prefaced them, you can't get angry.
I agree to it.
No, I think that, like, you and I, I'm making this comparison to illustrate a very particular point. I'm not, read me, I am not saying that Baptists are as misinformed or theologically foolish as prosperity gospel believers. I am not saying that. The comparison I wish to draw is that when you see somebody who is misled by teachers, you usually get angry at the teachers, not the misled people. So when you look at somebody who is in Todd White's church, you're not mad at that person necessarily. You're really mad at Todd White. And when I think about my frustration with Baptists, I think about a lot of people who I feel like should know better. Like, I will see John Piper say things about covenant discontinuity that I know he can't consistently believe and think he ought to know better. But that doesn't make me angry at Joe Baptist.
Yeah, okay. Okay, that's fair. None of that made me angry. Like, I was even trying.
Well, I think I prefaced it really, really well, because if I had just come out of left field and said something like, you know how you don't get angry at people who go to Todd White's church, but you get angry at Todd White? I don't get angry at Baptists. I get angry at John Piper.
Okay.
You guys are just like a bunch of, you know, prosperity gospel believers throwing your money at John Piper. Like, if I had made it sound like that, but I tried not to.
Your preface was fairly successful, so that's good.
My nose is actually my preface.
Yeah. It's
my ears are my postface.
Hit the nose before the face. Your nose gets anywhere before the rest of you does.
Especially the back of my face.
The back of the front of your face.
Well, that's my nose.
Okay. Oh, David. Such joy. Such memories. Okay, well, I accept that. I was just curious. Do you feel like, how do you feel like you've changed as a result of the show?
As a result of the show?
Yeah, we've talked about some pretty crazy stuff.
There's
a whole lot of things I've changed on.
I know that. Go ahead.
No, it's okay.
I know that you have made me more aware of my interactions in debates with people. Like, okay. As a result of the show, that's tricky. Here's a question for you. I find that as a deliberate result of podcasting, excuse me, I don't know what's wrong with me. I find that as a direct result of podcasting, I have become significantly more articulate.
Cool. Yeah.
That, like, before I started, and I don't just mean flogging, I mean podcasting in general, yeah. But flogging is the show I've done the longest. That before I started, I really struggled to articulate myself on the fly.
Yeah.
And, like, I wouldn't say that, oh, like, now I'm, like, super articulate, you know, Mr. Super Articulate or anything like that. But I find that people sometimes are intimidated by, like, how much better than average, I guess, I am at articulating complex things on the fly. Yeah. And I know that so much of it is because, man, not only did you and I do this thing where we would talk about some pretty complex and pretty, like,
in-depth things for an hour and a half every week. But also, I would then listen to myself and get mad at myself for all of the ways that I was stupid. and like, basically, like a Roman Catholic sort of, like, purgatory them out of myself, because I would just feel bad about them, so bad about them, that the next time I heard them coming out of my mouth, I would, you know, little ticks and things like that. So I know that's a big thing. Is that a thing for you?
I believe that I have improved marginally. I did listen to the show. I did not listen to the show for the same reason you did. I edited most of these shows.
Right. And editing is different from just listening.
And I never, and when I was done editing a show, I didn't really have a interest in listening to it. Your episodes I did, because you were really funny with sound effects, and I always thought your shows were much better produced than mine. And I always liked listening to your shows. But because of that, I didn't listen like you did. Now, and also, I didn't have that that self-improvement practice mindset. So you benefited from that much more than I did.
Because I would listen specifically for follow-up.
I didn't. I didn't. Yeah. And that's not to say that I shouldn't. I believe that I should have, because I'm getting into the self-improvement thing way too late in life. Now, I believe that I'm more articulate than I used to. Certainly can't pronounce words, but I am more articulate than
I used to.
There's
a deep irony there.
I'm more confident with my views and my thoughts and speech. Not to say that they're better, or I'm better at doing it, but I'm more confident now than I used to be. I used to be pretty afraid to talk to you on some things, because I just didn't think I would be compelling. But I had to do a lot of improvements at work for my own abilities.
Okay.
And that helped me, as we went along, be much better at this than I used to be. So I did focus on some self-improvement, just in a different sphere, or vertical, as they say in the business world. I think I would have done much better back then. Now, the thing with me is I'm too intellectually lazy. I believe that there's potential in me for a lot more than I currently have capacity for. Now, let me rephrase. I believe that there's more potential in me. I could be better at this. But there's just so much self-destructive tendencies in me that I just never put in the work on really much of anything. Some things I do. But the show, I never really put in the work to be properly prepared on a lot of those topics of ours. I thought I was just better at winging it, and I was much more comfortable with winging it. And I believe that with knowledge comes confidence, and with preparation and knowledge comes confidence. And I just learned that way too late in life, or embraced it way too late in life, wished that I did. So I wasn't quite on the track that you were. I'm glad that it worked out well for you. But I just have so much crap in my head that I just haven't been able to really get past. And one of these days, I'm going to figure out that I really need to kind of maximize my productivity and output in my interactions with people. And one of these days, I'm going to do it.
I can also say two other things. One is that we had episode 57, Red, Green, Colorblind was my coming out of the autism closet episode. And I don't know if I would have been like, this show has made me more introspective. It's made me think more about like who I am on the inside than I otherwise would have been. And there's a part of me that wonders if I even would have taken the quiz. If I like, you know, there were things that I've done in terms of like thinking about how I think about things that I don't know that I would have done if I didn't have the thought this could be a good flogging topic. So, like, I'm not saying that, like, David discovering that he's probably autistic is something that was literally because of flogging, but it might have taken me significantly longer without flogging. It's definitely been the case that flogging has been, because, I mean, that's the show, right? The show is, we think about, like, where we're coming from. Like, I wonder, like, did you know about yourself that you keep two sets of books, and could you have, like, talked about it to the same degree?
No. I mean, I just had two sets of books. But
right.
You're not really aware that you're in the room with two sets of books, and or knowing that it's better to have one. But like when I needed to be given the language, and I got that from
right.
Once I got that language, then I realized that about myself. And yeah, so that part is probably an example of something that I've learned about myself because of the show.
Yeah.
And most of my change or improvement, or I guess change is a better way to put it, is when you and I talked about, you know, mental health and anxiety and going through darker times, melancholy, if you will. That's been my biggest, like, the biggest change mentally for me is how I was given language to deal with that kind of stuff. Now, am I better off? I still go through that kind of stuff, but at least I know how to get out of it versus being utterly helpless.
I mean,
helpless.
That's a big difference. Yeah.
Being utterly helpless before and just being carried by the whims of myself, which is an awful thing. I now have language and tools.
I was once carried by your whims. It's not pleasant.
Not fun, no.
There was a Werner Herzog.
my whims, you had to follow along with a lot of those whims, let me tell you. But you did it well.
Another thing that's come out of, this is related to the first thing that I brought up, that's come out of listening to the show. I was thinking about this on my walk back home when I noticed where all the garbage cans are. So when we moved in, it was a weird home buying experience because we actually met the people who were selling our home to us.
That's weird.
Yeah, we didn't like that. Did not like that. Yeah. No, I mean, they were pleasant people. They were fine. But it's just weird knowing them. And there were reasons why it was just more convenient for us to like interact in person. But when we came here and they gave us all the final keys and told us where they had put the mail that we had accidentally received earlier, all of that, they were just trying to give us like the rundown of like the neighborhood or whatever. Like, oh, that guy over there is nice. That guy over there, he's been here forever. He's fine. He doesn't talk, you know, whatever. And they pointed to where the trash cans are. And the way that they pointed and where we were standing, or you know, where the trash cans go to be picked up by the people who, you know, pick up the trash. And the way that we were standing and all of it, I had no way to know where they were pointing other than generically in that direction. Like, okay, sometimes you point and people can tell exactly where you're pointing. Yeah. And sometimes it's like, oh, west.
Okay.
And it was one of those contexts. And I realized on my walk home, because I figured it out by looking at where all the other people were putting their trash cans a few days later. Mm-hmm. But I realized something about like how people communicate, which is when he pointed, he was looking at exactly what he was pointing at, and he was seeing trash cans there in his mind. Like, oh, the trash cans go there. But when he pointed, all that he did, this is hard to articulate, but all that he did from my perspective was just kind of like, you know, like just kind of give me a general direction to look, but he was looking at a particular spot on the pavement, if that makes sense.
I think I'm following you, actually.
And it occurred to me that a lot of communication is that. There are like two ways to think about communication. One is, do I feel like I have said something that signifies what I'm thinking of? And another way to think about it is, do I feel like the idea that I have in my head is now in that person's head, clearly? Okay. Like, one way says, it's kind of like when you write a note for yourself and you just kind of scribble the word like, fudge brownies, mm-hmm, or F brownies, right? And you come back 5 days later and you're like, what was I thinking? But if you come back to it a half hour later when you're at the grocery store, you're like, oh, fudge brownies, you know. Yeah. But nobody else in the world would know what that is. Like, most people would think that you're trying to say something bad about brownies. Yeah. And there's communicating for yourself and there's communicating for other people. They're different things. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. A lot of people go through life saying, oh, yeah, it's the F brownies, thinking everybody knows what that means. Right. And a lot of people point generically, thinking you know what they're looking at when you don't. Yeah. And I was realizing that one of the things that this show has done for me as I've listened to myself is I try to listen from the perspective of the listener, and I get really frustrated with myself whenever I do that thing where I say something that signifies it in my head and I think, a listener has no idea what I'm saying. A listener has no clue what I'm trying to articulate.
I am so far behind you. I just either don't care or don't have the capacity to do this. And maybe I'm signaling myself, I should just stop playing the dumb role. I think a lot of people would struggle with this. It's like why it's so hard for people to be good teachers or hard to be good teachers because of that very dynamic. It's very difficult to get outside of yourself and to have the ability to intellectually figure out how you are being perceived by other people is very difficult to do. But once you figure it out, it changes how you talk, changes how you teach, it changes how you communicate with people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the solution is to get better at that.
Or you could try listening to all our episodes and getting really mad at yourself.
Yeah. Well, actually, there were some times where I did that. But that would be difficult for me. It would probably it'd be a long process for me. But that's kind of a cool dynamic that worked out for you that way. I mean, you were already pretty articulate to start with, but I get it.
Well, and it's also, that's another thing that I've realized about myself even very recently is that it's a lot easier for me to put myself in somebody else's intellectual shoes than in their emotional shoes, if that makes sense.
Oh, hey, yeah, that's kind of an unintended skill.
Right.
And a pretty valuable one, I think.
I think early on in the show I was a lot worse at it, but I think like in terms of like if I measure my growth, trying to put myself in other people's emotional shoes during the course of this show versus trying to put myself in somebody else's intellectual shoes, the intellectual one grew much faster. At least I hope. Maybe people are like, what is this guy saying? Who are shoes? What are intellectual shoes? Intellectual. Is that like loafers?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good argument. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. That's probably the best example of growth from you. And I kind of sorry to say that I didn't really realize that until now. That's what you've been doing this whole time. Me, I'm just carried by the whims of Werner Herzog, just having a fun time, which I guess in the end is a good enough reason to do this show. But
I wasn't doing it for self-improvement. I was doing it for follow-up, if that makes sense. Like I was listening back so that in the next episode I could improve. But in the process, yeah, it's kind of like when you take public speaking and you get one of those professors who like every time you say the word he's going to make some disgusting noise so that you become hyper aware of it. And then from that point on, you're like cured. You know, it's not like you're never going to say ever, but like when it becomes that bad and you realize that it's that bad, you start to go every time you say and he's not even there.
Yeah, sure.
I want to can we spend a little bit more time on Jim is the dumb one. Because Jim as the dumb one, rather.
Could we?
The reason I want to is because it gets at something about our show that I wonder how many people realize. And I also wonder how much we realize it.
Okay.
Like, So, I think that there are times in our show where it's obvious that I'm being the autist, the nerdy autist, okay, and I'm doing it intentionally. Like there are times when I will say things that are
like when you're doing
deliberately,
a bit, or
yeah, like I'm deliberately misunderstanding you to make a joke,
yeah,
so okay, that we can laugh at how like David doesn't understand humans, right?
The ones like, I understand are funny.
there are times when that happens, and there are times where you deliberately do the thing where you're like, you know, playing the dumb Baptist or whatever. Like everybody knows that that's a thing that occurs.
Yeah.
What's always been unclear to me, and I say this just as much about you as about me, is like, to what degree are you and I playing parts when we do this show? Like when you and I have, I think there are times where it's also pretty obvious that we're having a very honest conversation.
Yeah.
Like right now.
Yeah.
But even in the midst of that, there are little like they describe the writing of The Simpsons as like elastic reality, mm-hmm, where like generally speaking, The Simpsons is relatively realistic, and then something super bizarre happens and it stretches reality, and then reality snaps back into existence and things move on as if it were a real like sitcom or whatever.
Okay. Man, this, I don't know, this is, I know what you're talking about, and I know that there are radio personalities that do this. Like, mm-hmm, if I think it is at least widely known amongst conservative talk show hosts, and I suspect this is actually very true, that Rush Limbaugh, for the most part, played a character his entire career, to the point where he doesn't personally believe everything he says.
Hmm.
But he plays a character. When he got super, super, super big, he kind of started winking at the audience about this.
Hmm.
And devotees of the show kind of knew that he just was, like, it's like he's playing with us. This guy is totally playing. He's playing a character. And I believe that he it sounds genuine, but I don't quite know. Glenn Beck admitted he does this a long time ago. He says he doesn't actually care at all about the political process. He owns an entertainment company. He's playing a part. Mm-hmm. He's a method acting a persona. Those guys are doing it on purpose. I know this. I'm aware of this. Might have developed somewhat of a persona as the dumb guy. But I need to just admit that it's actually because I'm just not quite there on a lot of the things you and I talked about. I fit in nicely as the guy who doesn't know as much about the topic as you did. But that was safe for me. I want to believe that maybe I fell into it. I'm trying to think of times where I wasn't trying to make a bit or trying to be funny. And I, like, honestly played that role. I don't know. I really don't. I want to kind of affirm what you're trying to get at here, but I just don't know if I can. I might have. Just, I don't think I just did it knowingly.
I think that the times that, like, I don't know. Because I kind of want to wrap this up for listeners a little bit, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Because I think that, like I can say on my part that, like, the times where it's obvious that I'm joking, I'm joking, probably.
Okay. Yeah.
But, like, there have definitely been times where, like, you've even gotten frustrated with me. Not, like, mad frustrated, but just a bit frustrated. Yeah. Where I'm legit not doing a bit. I just don't understand the social dynamic that's happening between us.
All right.
And I imagine that it's probably the same way for you, that, like, the times where there's times where you're playing dumb, and there's times where you just, like there are times where you ask a question, like, what does that mean or whatever, and it's a genuine question. And then there are times where you ask that because, well, and yours, like, my thing is literally just funny and making fun of me. Your thing actually serves a practical purpose because, you know, if you and I are both having a conversation about a theological term that we know what it is, but you step into dumb Jim and ask, yeah, but, you know, what does that mean or whatever? The listener who didn't know what that is now has the definition of it in a way that he wouldn't have if you weren't doing your bit.
You know, you might be onto something here. I think you and I had to do this. Like, when you and I were really rocking and rolling with this show, recording every single week, writing bits, carefully planning out pages of notes per show, and we're just had a pretty good rhythm going. I think I might have fallen into some stuff, just because I know this is what I have to do to keep the show going, and I know and the audience is really liking us right now. They're messaging us. I had a stranger come up to me and said he listens to the show and loved it. So I think maybe I unconsciously fed into that role because it's like it's working for us.
The other roles that I noticed were you're the angry guy and I'm the emotionless guy.
When, like, we were, like, meta talking about it, you mean? Like,
I mean, like, you were the one who was always just a bit frustrated with me, and I was kind of the oblivious in terms of, like, I was the socially dumb one, and you were the one who was always a bit annoyed at me and always suspected that it wasn't true. And some of that was real.
Well, I
and
mean,
some
I
of that was a
that.
Little bit of a bit.
It's like one of the only things I have over you. Like, one of the things, I don't want to say it that way.
Well, that and your girth.
That I got you beat there. It's like one of the only things that you would give me that I could, if we were in a random group of people, that emotionally I could pick up on their cues better than you could.
Right.
And it was like the only thing I did better, you know? So maybe I fed into it or pushed into it, leaned into it. More.
And none of this is like by way of accusation. I just feel like if I was a listener, I would be wondering, like, to what degree was it all real? To what degree was it a bit? And I feel like some listeners some listeners might not have known that there was a blurring of the lines. Because I think that's the point that I want to make, is that there was a real blurring of the lines on that.
We played characters almost. But I never lied. I don't think I ever lied on the show.
No, and I mean, honestly, like, it's an entertainment podcast. Yeah. So like right out
that's
of the gate,
all we
it's
are.
Like right. It was never about like an accusation or anything like that. I think that's an interesting dynamic that we picked up, that there's a very like there were moments that were very, very real between us, for sure. Yeah. And there were whole moments that, like, I'm realizing a listener could have listened to and thought were real but weren't. And I don't think that's bad, because, again, it's an entertainment show and we're calling it out here in episode 150. If you listened all the way through, now you know to go back and deal with some things a little bit skeptically.
Okay.
But it's also the case that I feel like that blurring of the line isn't just for the listeners. I feel like if you and I were to go back to, like, something that happened in episode 13 or something, you and I might be like, you know, I'm not sure. It might have been a little bit of both.
Yeah, man, I should. When I do, I want to do a listen through of the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when I want to do it.
It's so time consuming. We talked so much.
I know it's 150 episodes. Well, more than that.
And they're long.
And they are long, especially 2/3 of the shows. The first 2/3, I think we were doing hour and a half, 2 hour shows.
Yep.
And we tried to pull that back. But I want to listen when I am completely outside of it. Mm. I could probably do that now. But like, I want to listen and
Jim, feel, we're recording.
Thank you. I want to listen and feel like a listener, you know,
right.
Which could happen. And when I do, I wonder if I'm going to pick up on that stuff and notice, like, Jim, you have no idea how to read David right now. And it's just painfully obvious. If only you knew. This conversation could have been, but that was part of the charm of the show. Was you and I? I mean, that was the point of the show. You and I figuring right. each other out. That was the point of the show. So I'm glad it happened.
Yep. If you want to feel like a listener, listen to it while looking in the mirror, because you'll see that you're not talking, and you'll know that it's not you.
A joke, but profoundly correct. Actually. I think that could work.
I thought it was just a joke, but here we are.
Yeah, here we are, Jim. Playing the dumb role.
Yeah, anyway, I'll be the first one to get a little bit sentimental and say that, like,
yeah.
I'm really glad we did this. I think that, like, I guess this is another answer to your question, is just that, like, I've only had a handful of people in my life where I've spent as much time as I have with you.
Yeah.
Getting to know them, understanding what makes them tick, and like having conversations about inner psyches. Like,
yeah.
I've had a couple of best friends, my wife, and you, and I would definitely describe you as like, throughout my life, you've definitely been one of my best friends.
Cool.
And so, I don't know. Like, I just learned a lot about, you know, I talk to my pastor now, and I tell him, yeah, I've told him that I believe I'm autistic, our new pastor.
Yeah.
And that,
Stephen Lawson, your new pastor.
And I have told him that, like, I've kind of, when I realized that I was autistic back in, when was that? Or realized that I'm probably autistic. I mostly just refer to myself as autistic now, because I've become increasingly convinced that no adult can really know if they are or not, unless they were diagnosed as a child.
Okay.
But you can't know. It's just very expensive and most people don't bother. September of 2019. Actually, I figured it out a little bit before that. So we'll say summer of 2019. Like, since then, I have really, like, gone on the deliberate path of trying to understand, like, how to become more human. And I articulated it to him as, you know, Data's journey.
Please, I hope your story doesn't end with you sacrificing your life on a Romulan warship. You know? It's just... And I have to put you down in a quantum reality. You know, I don't know.
Oh, did you finally watch that?
I did.
Okay, good. Okay. How is that not an episode?
we'll do it as a one-off.
But where was I going with this? Recently, that's meant for me reading a lot of Jay Adams, Don't At Me. And I don't know. It all started in a very real sense with you, because in our show, there were things that, like, I don't know. I've had unreasonable people in my life. I like yeah. to think, have I articulated the antithesis of autism to you before?
No.
So I think I might have talked about this on the show, and I might just be phrasing it to you badly right now, but I believe that there is an inverse disability to autism. So autistic people are often categorized as people who are very bad at thinking about emotions, very bad at thinking emotionally, thinking about other people's emotions, and generally very good at thinking in terms, or at least much better at thinking in terms of abstract or logical expressions of things, thinking words versus emotions, right? Autistic people think more in words than in emotions. That's kind of a caricature. I think the inverse exists. I've had conversations with people in my life where I will say to them something like, I do not wish to go to the store today. Okay. But because of some emotional thing in how I'm articulating it, they will come to the conclusion that more than anything, I want to go to the store, and I'm upset with them for not knowing it. And I think that's the antithesis of autism, because what it represents is a functional disability in terms of you are not capable, in the same way that I'm not capable of having the emotional nonverbal conversation, you are only capable of having the emotional nonverbal conversation, and the verbal is just white noise to you.
I think I might have done that to you a couple of times.
I don't think that you are this way. Well, I really don't. But I've known people like that, and a lot of my life, I've just categorized people as being that way. And I knew that you weren't that way.
I don't think you're wrong here. This is fascinating to me.
I knew that you weren't that way. I knew that you're a reasonable person. Like, you might not be the most reasonable person in the world. Who is? Well, that one guy. But like, I know you're a reasonable person, and so I felt compelled to undertake to try to be more understandable to you.
But that's the word.
And I'm glad I did.
That is a David McCookie word. I undertook the friendship, the gestures I had to withstand. And David, let me say, it's my turn now. I'm glad that you did. To say that you and I, our friendship is unlikely is I think an understatement, but then it is not. Because all I've ever really needed to get along with somebody is a sense of humor. Because I very much rely on my sense of humor to relate to people and to shield stuff. And as long as you're funny, I feel like I can get along with the guy. If that did not exist, I don't think you and I would like each other or want to become friends or pursue any type of relationship. I think you and I would have written each other off. Because I know I'm annoying enough to you sometimes. And
right back at you.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we admit that about each other, but that's part of the charm of you and I is that, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm short. Maybe I'm getting this wrong. I'm not saying that your sense of humor is the only thing I like about you. It's not what I'm saying, David. I like you as a person.
You sound like my wife.
Yeah. Boy, have I heard this before. But that really started it for you and I. Even me with a need to do funny stuff and have people make people laugh. I don't think I would have ever done a podcast, to be honest with you. I don't think I ever would have. And doing this with you was a bit of a leap for me. I didn't quite know how different you were from you were different enough. I didn't quite know where it was going to go.
Right.
But I'm so glad that I did. When you think about it this way. Other than your spouse, kids, and some work friends, or not work friends, just work acquaintances. If I think about all those people in my life, and parents and family, the list is just growing. Other than the obvious.
Other than 487 people
that I know in my life. You're right. I have spent more time with you than best friends.
Yeah, yeah.
I have logged more time with you than most.
You log the time too?
I have it written down in a book.
I will be charging you.
Yeah. And that's kind of fun to think about, you know? Like, I really know this guy well. More than a lot of friends that I have. Because I've just spent so much darn time with you.
Mm-hmm. And like not just crazy. Like talking about football, but like talking about like what makes us tick.
Pretty think about it. The list of topics that you and I have talked about far exceed the topics I would even remotely get close to with anybody else.
Yep.
Other than my wife.
Yep.
That
I had I had a roommate in college, and I have my wife, and that's it. And like some of the things we've talked about have been prompted by this show.
Yeah, you're right. They've inspired, you know. I'm never going to talk about Boolean cubes with anybody, or Bulverisms, or mental models. I have yet to broach that topic with anybody other than you. And the charms of our relationship manifested very early and have been part of why I kept doing it. And this has been quite a fun, meaningful, satisfying show and relationship. And you and I are going to continue on with this. We're going to start our scheduled monthly meetups.
The consequence of waiting to end the show is that like we just hadn't talked for like 6 months.
Yeah. We haven't. Just a couple of messages back and forth. And David and I wanted to keep some sort of cadence after the show ended. And also, other than just putting up maybe some additional fun content, just for him and I to keep talking, because it would be a shame, I think a genuine shame, if you and I ended.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be honest, when you move away, or...
And then the other person moves away too.
The likelihood of that relationship continuing on in a satisfying or meaningful way is very, very low. It's just
you might have 30 friends, like people that you interact with on a regular basis, and when you move, you'll be lucky if you keep one or two of them.
Yep, and that's been a thing for me, probably a thing for you too, because we lived in Spokane for a long, long time, and had plenty.
Now all my friends are in Broken Whistle, Montana.
Yeah, yeah, and I could never imagine not being friends with these people, but you know what? That's coming, and I am going to cease relationship with most of the Spokane people that I know. That is weird.
Especially if they keep doing what they're doing, you know?
Yeah, probably.
I'm just making stuff up.
But you and I, it's not going to be the case. We're going to try and keep this going. So I look forward to that. This is it. This is our last episode. It's been fun doing this for everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you got something out of it. Hope you learned a couple of things and were entertained. I hope this show was unique as we hoped it would be. It was very important to me to put something out there that was different than a lot of the other podcasts you would probably have access to in our sphere, our vertical, our way of doing it. I hope that was the case. I like to think we are successful. And David, I'll give you one last word and then we'll end the show.
Are you not entertained?
I hope they are. Werner Herzog did a Bernie Sanders impression a couple of times. Yeah, we gave him a lot.
I was talking to them.
Okay.
Yeah, you're just stealing. That's all I have is a line from Gladiator.
Okay.
Which is how the cannibal felt after he ate his mother-in-law.
Folks, it's been fun. We'll see y'all later. Goodbye.
Bye.
Someone save me from this podcast. Is it over or just dragging along? Will these two guys talk forever? Or will they quit if I sing them this song? My back is sore from all this flagellation. Started off so tongue-in-cheek. Now it seems it's almost over, so I'll just have to wait.